Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Lorigoids. Woo! I'm one of your hosts, Michelle.
I'm Justin.
And I'm A.E.
And we are back.
We're back.
From GP Seattle.
From Seattle.
Oh my goodness, so much good coffee.
All the cards.
And oh yeah, we also, A.E. visited the Museum of Pop Culture and saw some really cool pieces of art.
More cards.
They had a, Ravnica Panorama and Bucket Island on proud display.
Bucket Island. Best island ever, if I may say, even though it's literally not an island, but, you know, whatever. It's cool.
It's an island in some circles.
In some
In Magic, buckets? Island is more of a feeling than an act, than to be taken literally.
Ah, more of a feeling. Hear that, friends? Being blue.
More than a feeling.
More than a feeling. Bucket Island's a feeling. Bucket Island's a feeling.
On the subject, Dominaria has an island which is entirely underwater, which I feel is very appropriate for the Vidalian Empire or what have you. And I'm happy to see that. So yeah, it's more of like a sense of isolation and expanse and like, don't touch me.
No touching. So that's why the shirts for Blue Mage just say nope, because it includes no touching. So,
And the island, the blue mana symbol is shaped like a tear, because that's what happens when to your opponent when you counter all of their important spells.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They generate free blue mana their face.
Yeah, because it, you know, that sense of isolation.
You
and
fill the saltwater ocean with their tears, yes.
That's right.
So much feelings. So with that, we are going to delve right into the newest, the second newest story of Dominaria, episode 4, A New Hull. Take it away, A.E.
Tiana, a newly minted angel, stands bathed in light and glowing with purpose.
I'm a battle angel!
You're more of a guardian angel, sweetie.
Guardian of what, my new angel friend? Tell me, it must be super important.
It's a ditch.
What?
An irrigation ditch, and it's machinery or something. It's all a little below me, but I'm sure it'll suit you. Sarah doesn't make mistakes, usually. And I wouldn't worry about you having one wing shorter than the other, either. It's not that noticeable.
Oh, no. Which one?
And it really doesn't matter if you don't glow very brightly. And it's not your fault you're born so late. Not all angels spontaneously generate at the same rate. I'm sure the delay won't matter. Here, let's go to your ditch.
But what's that smoke in the distance? And all those people are weeping. What burned?
Not much. Just your life's purpose.
Her mission in life utterly destroyed. Tiana becomes an angel without a cause. That is, until she is assigned to the Weatherlight. Happily covered in grease and soot, she's become an angelic mechanic. And a man unfashionably fanged is walking toward her ship. She grabs her spear and gives him the most adorable death threat known to the multiverse.
I see you're a vampire. Sorry about that. Any last words?
The vampire, dressed like a Benelish knight, tells her his name is Arvad, and that he has no intention of hurting anyone. Being near the Power Stone calms his vampiric urges. Tiana reflects on how different they are, but still so alike. Neither sleep at night. Both aren't where they are meant to be. More than that, there's something about Arvad.
There's something sweet and almost kind, but he was mean in a vampire and...
Are you singing to me? Am I supposed to sing along with you? I'm not much of a singer, you know. I whatever passes the time, so I don't think about drinking the blood of my victims, you know. It's kind of awkward, you know.
Uh-huh.
Back when I was dubbed, just...
okay.
We should keep as much as that.
You know, the lady always said... I had a really nice singing face.
We can use "Oh, never mind" from earlier.
Yeah, we should. Because I can't replicate it right now.
And then I grew out these fangs.
Okay, we've got
take a drink, Justin.
To go through.
And I don't mean of blood. The unlikely friends become even closer and they defend the Weatherlight from a flaming death chicken. Tiana tells him,
guarding the Weatherlight feels so right.
Then why are you crying?
I was meant to guard a ditch, and I couldn't even do that.
What? You belong here with the Skyship and its crew.
I don't.
You know everything about the engines. Sarah is guiding you.
How can you know that?
I was a paladin. Maybe I still am.
I'm just a dim angel with one short wing and engine grease on her hands.
Then that grease is blast.
Hashtag Arvad and Tiana BFFs forever. Oh my God, Justin, your Arvad voice. So when we were recording this, we could not finish for like a hot second because Arvad is just now like a vampire cowboy, but because he's always been on his lonesome for such a long time. Drinking the blood of Grimnitz.
Of the Cabal minions.
And then
doing my duty as a knight to slay the minions, but no innocence.
Yep, no innocence.
I drink the blood because I have to.
Around the campfire, yeah.
Around the campfire. I don't know. Maybe he'll get a singing contract. I kind of feel like maybe we'll see, like, maybe he'll sponsor us at some point. That could be fun.
Oh my gosh. I hope so. Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
So this story, how adorable is this story? I'm putting it on a scale of like sacred cat to new Dominaria Thalids. Like, how adorable is this?
Tiana's pretty great.
Tiana's
and
amazing.
Justin's Arvad is also great.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
it's pretty amazing, but I do love this little heartwarming thing of like, and you know, we were just on Innistrad not very long ago, and on that world the angels were cray cray and the vampires were also cray cray, but not as cray cray. And now we're in a situation where like apparently miracles happen on the Weatherlight. That's just what happens on the ship. We have angels becoming mechanics and like knowing how to fix engines, becoming friends with like an adorable vampire knight whose dentures actually, not dentures, the canines actually shrink when he gets closer to the Power Stone. It was just an adorable little thing. Oh, and Slimefoot, the beginning of Slimefoot makes a slight preview here. That little dot in that corner.
It's true. It's just like a black dot or something.
Yeah. It's like a black dot.
A mold, beauty spot, and piece of bread.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. And you know that beauty spot's going to grow into your new janitor. Because that's how
new
that rolls.
New hero, you mean?
Yep, your new hero. Great.
You know, if somebody has an infection of some sort, they, you know, Slimefoot just could come and save the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Slimefoot seems like the right person who would have excellent, like, anti-infectal things. Or if he's really mad at you, he could also just infect you.
Right.
Like, I imagine Slimefoot is both a giver and a receiver of blessings and curses alike as a true green-black character.
You mean a giver and a giver.
He's a giver and a getter.
He's a ship's cook, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh. Is he?
Little Thalids, they're just so cute and yummy.
And yeah. Crunchy.
Yeah, and crunchy. And crunchy. Just like ice lettuce, but with more like mushrooms.
Yeah, mushroom. Yeah, you slice them really thinly, and you put a little bit of butter.
They wriggle a little bit, but that's okay. They don't.
They're
feel
so enthusiastic about
being eaten.
Being eaten. Can you imagine like scooping them up with a fork, and they're like, "Put me in your mouth! Put me in your mouth! Yay! Yay! We're doing it! Yay! It feels so good to be crunched into oblivion."
Oh God, that's so disturbing. Oh God, Justin, no.
Okay,
yeah.
Back to the story of
Slimefoot loves you.
Oh, no. Wow. Sacrifice me, get two from Ashland's altar.
I think this is the top. We're never getting back.
Oh my God. Well, I mean,
see what happens when we don't record an episode for 2 weeks.
So I did want to give some credit to Martha Wells. We exaggerate some things for comedic effect on this show, you may have guessed. But Martha Wells did have the funny element of the angels kind of ribbing poor Tiana, and she's feeling more and more shame, the poor little girl. So great sympathy built for her, and that was a fun scene.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely heartbreaking, but also adorable. Like, I just wanted to pick up Tiana and hold her close to me and just be like, it's okay. You don't need a giant irrigation plant ditchy thing to be a real angel. You can come guard my plumbing. Mm-hmm. I you can come to my bathroom. You just like, oh, I'm now guarding Michelle's plumbing. She's got the cleanest drains this side of the multiverse. It's great. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed, it's been such a long time since we've had such a wholesome character like Tiana. Like, I can't remember the last time I there was a character quite like this, where we were just like, oh my gosh, I just want to just hug you and pinch your cheeks and, I don't know, feed you cake. I'm not really sure what else people do to people they find adorable, but that's sort of what I want to do.
She would probably like pink cake.
She would probably like pink
cake. Shaped like the weather light. Now, one other thing that Martha Wells included was the line, quote, so far she, Tiana, had to drive off a Kavu, its tongue of flame. That's a callback to Flame Tongue Kavu.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which shows that, which shows likely that the creative team is working closely with Martha Wells to make this a very referential and with a lot of good callbacks to the original cards.
So. How do you think that scene actually worked out with her chasing away the flame tongue Kavu? Do you think she cuddled it before she said, now, scoot, scoot, run away. Run away, you hear? And don't come back unless it's later.
Yeah, it is a little bit like a Snow White, but more deadly situation where she's like, oh, you're so cute. Go away or else I will impale you with my spear, but I'll be really sorry about it.
Cute laughter. Cute.
I really hope that's not how it works.
But yeah,
the scene with Arvad seems so kind of awkward at first because she was all like bubbly and cheerful, and but you're a vampire and I have to kill you. I'm sorry. Taste spear.
Taste my steel. But yeah, no, I really do love the interplay between these two characters, and it's sort of kind of where what the Weatherlight has sort of become, I think, to a lot of these characters, right? Because we've got Joyra, who is a woman who's lived for so long, she's out of her own time, and we have Raph, who's an awkward teenager trying to learn how to adult good. The Weatherlight's attracting all these individuals who are looking for a place to belong and a place to be, and it's really adorable to see this, you know, this kind of family, this crew of misfits come on board and I don't know, learn how to be a family together and eat thalids and clean the ship and all sorts of stuff. I don't think magic could have been this adorable, but apparently it is.
Yeah. And then the flaming death bird descends from the skies.
Yeah, the flaming death bird. I love that. Even that's really cute.
The uncommon one, not the mythic rare one.
Yeah, the uncommon one. That's how they're able to dispatch it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just get in a walking ballista.
I'm noticing there's a trend in each of these episodes where there's peace in the beginning and then there's climax. In the last episode, episode 3, there was this chase of the Cabal in a marketplace. And then the episode before that was the epic confrontation between the Cabal and Liliana and Gideon. And then before that, with episode 1, it was a story-setting episode, but there's this trend now in the episodes that something new happens, we get reunited with other characters, and then those characters go fight a phoenix, or they fight the Cabal, and then they end on like a cliffhanger of what's to come in the next episode.
Well, I mean, I know what I want to happen. I want Tiana and Arvad to become the best of friends and to star on an adorable Three's Company sitcom with Slimefoot. and they're on the Weatherlight and it's just beautiful and wonderful and the Cabal falls apart and no one thinks about them.
Where so everybody knows your name.
That's
the
cheers.
Opposite of beautiful. One minor point, Arvad mentions Grimnants, which are Cabal paladins. There's been some talk, especially from JNL, that this is a retelling of Krovax and Selenia. Between these two characters, one of which was a vampire. I guess Krovax. Yeah, Krovax was not originally a vampire.
But he became a vampire.
But in this angel. and I told him, shut the hell up.
Yes.
No, well, I think if it maybe, it could be like a juxtaposition, but I don't like the idea that these are directly analogous characters. Like, the, I don't, or that they had anything to do with each other, because I think that it was cruel to have the idea that somehow Senia's spirit is reincarnated and now forced to be with Krovax again. I feel that's cruel. So I'm not keen on that theory, but it is interesting to note the juxtaposition.
Yeah.
So you'd meant the, so there's Krovax and then there's Selenia. Is this the, not that I don't want to even call it a love story, because it wasn't a love story. It was a tragic story of, and I can't speak fully intelligently on this point, but Selenia was the angel who was cursed, right?
Yeah, she was cursed, and she was like part Phyrexian, but she was bound to Krovax with a with some kind of artifact, and he fell in love with her. And being a, you know, a, being a creation of pure white and black mana, she's like, I can't love anything. I'm just, all I know is to serve you. And
so Dan Elliott told me that angels canonically can love, but I don't like that
Selenia
either.
Selenia is not like, I mean, if they're...
And she is undead, and she's basically a Phyrexian sleeper agent. So, and he's her boss. So yeah. There's just, on so many levels, it's disturbing.
Hello, Selenia.
Yeah, there's just a lot of, like, just don't do it. The power dynamic there is just no. It's just, it's a very, it's one of those examples of, like, 90s poorly written gender stuff that's just, like, please don't.
She is a bucket island full of drama.
Exactly. Yeah. What
I like her individually as a tragic character, in, like reading it in hindsight of her, like, she's trying to suffer through this relationship with this abusive man and trying to get away from him. And so he blames his madness on her. So I feel it's very tragic from her perspective, but I don't really like his story at all. And he deserved to be ripped apart piece by piece, or however he died. The Evan Cars of Wrath died horribly.
Yes.
I think he was ripped apart piece by piece by Sabu, Zach, or something like that. But anyways,
yeah.
Or maybe that was Sabu, Zach. Oh, I can't even say their names. But anyway, moving on.
Well, moving, I think it's a really good point that you, you've brought up. Oh, well, I know that Jay kind of touched on this as well, but the idea that what we're seeing basically in the Weatherlight is essentially the Weatherlight game part two, where we see a lot of the older themes in terms of, you know, we've got the Enchanter who's, we've got some of the legacy folks like from the original Weatherlight, for example, like the Wrath Capuchin.
Who's a 3/3 with flash and flying, by the way? Like, how did such a
he's pretty studly.
He's like 17 or something.
Surprisingly, he's probably one of the most powerful cards on the Weatherlight right now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he wasn't lying apparently when he said he was accomplished. I mean, that power and toughness represents not his physical ability, but his how he's able to trick people with his illusion and that sort of stuff.
Yep. I mean, like, Tassiger is, what, a 5/5, and he's just a pale, wrinkly little banana boy, but anyway.
He's a 4/5, and he can return.
He's a 4/5.
Caracas bounces him back to your hand.
Yeah, and that's a really powerful thing, because he's a god. But anyway, I do like that we are seeing some of the themes that we kind of saw in terms of the characters and character arcs of the original Weatherlight being kind of brought into a new generation, into like something that's a lot healthier, into something that's a lot more thoughtful, and honestly, like, a lot better written. I really love the fact that, you know, we have an angel that is like, she's a misfit. She doesn't really have a place to belong, but she's found a place to belong. And she is definitely one of the most unique characters we've ever seen, in the multiverse. She's an artificer angel, and that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and when she was first born, she was like, I'm a battle angel like Aurelia, the war leader. I'm ready to hack some shit into pieces.
I'm going to double all the damage.
Yes, double all the damage, like the strikes and the weapons and the stuff. And then the other angels are like, whoa, now, pretty thing. You're cute, but you're going to go guard the ditch. And she's like, I'll guard the...
You don't need to guard it that hard. Okay. But it's that. And then you also have, you know, the Krovax as a character was terrible, like a terrible person. But now you have someone like Arvad who is struggling against his darker side, his darker nature. And that's a side to White Black that we haven't really covered in a really long time.
Oh, were you not there for Ixalan?
Oh, right. That's a fair point.
There's just so many remorseful vampires. Oh, my goodness.
Walking around, basically, like, flagellating themselves.
At least we have an honest vampire and the singer Trueblood. What's his name? He's a fancy name.
He has a, yeah.
I picture him as a foppish, kind of like Oscar Wilde sort of vampire.
Ooh. That's his war cry. but
it sends chills down your spine. The only thing worse than biting necks is not biting necks.
but we have a lot of the same cast returning, and I'm actually kind of excited because we've got a Johnny on board, and he's a Leonin, and Miri was also a cat-headed person, and it's just gonna be great, everyone.
Didn't even think about that.
Yeah, we've got the Enchanter, we've got the Vampire, we've got the Angel, we've got the Power Stone, we've got the Cat People.
What about Karn?
We're working on it. We're working on it. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, like, the gang's getting back together. This is like, I don't know, it's like listening to a cover of one of your favorite songs back in the day, but it's come back. It's like Smooth Criminal by Michael Jackson, but then Alien Ant Farm did it, and it's like, wow, that's actually a surprisingly good cover. I can't believe I just compared this to Alien Ant Farm. But anyway.
Well, initially, when Arvad was joining the group, there was some deliberation, right? Mm-hmm. And not everybody was all on board with having a vampire Tiana just met in the forest. And she's like, oh, you met a vampire in the forest. Well, why not?
Technically,
why not allow
him
on board?
But, mm-hmm. But I do like the image that Martha Wells gave us of the entire crew is like armed to the teeth and just like waiting for the vampire to do something wrong. And the vampire and Arva's just sitting there like, I'm next to the Power Stone. Yep.
He hopes it will cure him, right? That's the original premise.
Yeah, so he's hoping that it'll cure him. It doesn't seem like it's going to, unless he ingested it. I don't really know if it's going to cure him, but please don't eat the Power Stone, Arvad. That's not how you do it. But I like this image of the entire crew being like, all prepared, and Arvad's just standing there nonchalant, just hoping that this Power Stone will help him.
And there's still that lingering suspicion, right? One of the high-ranking ship people, I don't remember their name.
Hattie or Tian? One of them
looks over to Tiana and said, he's yours to watch over. He's your responsibility. Make sure he keeps his little fangs to himself. And then Tiana's like, yeah, I know, whatever. And then the Flaming Death Bird descends from the Flaming Death Mountain and creates an opportunity for Arvad to prove himself.
Mm-hmm. What I also really like about Arvad is the fact that he's really opening up to the other crew members, and he's starting to really be himself again. And like, for example, it says under the Power Stone's influence, Arvad had lost his vampiric sensitivity to sunlight. So he camped down on the beach, often stripping out of his armor to stand in the surf with a pole and catch fish to supplement.
Luxuriantly.
Yes. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's a fishing vampire. I love it. This is great. Also, I'm just imagining Arvad
like ripped.
He's ripped.
Handsome scars.
Maybe not since he's a vampire. I don't know.
Vampires are allowed to have handsome scars.
Okay.
Are you thinking of Hugh Jackman again?
I'm thinking of Hugh Jackman
fishing.
Arvad is Hugh Jackman fishing
with big old, well, maybe not so big old things.
Not so much, but he's also got a fishing hat.
Here, Michelle.
I got you a bass.
I hope you like tuna.
Oh my God, Arvad, that's 280 pounds. Yeah. How are you able to carry
it's
that?
It's no problem, Michelle.
Oh my God, no problem.
It'll feed us for like a week, Arvad.
I did it for you.
Oh my God, Arvad, thank you so much.
I believe on a different plane this is called Mahi Mahi.
Oh no. This is amazing, Arvad. Thank you so much.
You could take one of these coconuts that I found on the beach, and you could dry it in the sun and then coat the mahi-mahi with the coconut.
Wow, Arvad, I didn't realize you were so culinarily talented.
And then if you place the filet on the Power Stone gently.
Oh my God. garnish it with phthalates. You've got yourself some great stuff right
there. Hooray! We love being eaten with Mahi Mahi!
As you can tell, we really like Arvet and Tiana because they are the best.
You're eating me, wee!
You don't understand what a privilege it is.
Okay, on this high note, I think we should go to the ad.
Yes, we'll see you in a moment.
We
surpassed
ourselves again, but we'll be back for the next episode.
All right, take care. Bye.
Mirari, Mirari, on the stand. Who is the fairest in the land? And don't you lie to me, or I'll boot you back into the blind eternities.
I regret to inform you, my dark majesty, that your beauty has been usurped by another.
Lies! Conjecture! Who is she?
It is Joyra, an artificer. And like an artifact, she grows priceless with age.
Curse these wrinkles. I hate everything, but mostly you, Mirari. Prepare to meet your silver golem maker.
No. Wait. You two can be forever young. I know Joyra's secret.
Well then shut up already and tell me.
Ahem. I'm here to offer you the deal of a lifetime. Joyra's temporal water will keep you forever young.
Sounds like that elixir of immortality. Not interested in card disadvantage.
Joyra's temporal water is all advantage. Simply take 2 tablespoons per day and you will age gracefully, if at all.
Ooh.
Use it in your cauldron to prevent your potion from boiling too fast. Feed it to your newts and frogs to keep them fresh.
Yes, yes, yes!
But never use it on a first date or for dousing people who are on fire.
What are the side effects? How many witch warts will I grow?
None, mistress.
Will I have to sell my soul like that murder girl, the Curse of Vess?
All it takes is a few easy payments and a time rift.
Is that all? Tell me, what's the catch?
Beauty only runs skin deep. Inside, you will always be an ice age.
Fine. What do you know, omniscient magic mirror?
I know that Joyra's temporal water is the marvel you've been waiting for. Buy it today.
And welcome back to part 2 of today's episode. It's a double feature today. We're going to be covering the...
Double feature.
Double
picture show.
Yes.
With the Lorgoids.
Dominaria. Double feature. All right, we're going to...
Just imagine all of our mouths...
in lipstick.
In bright red lipstick, especially AE's.
Yes, mine's
especially
purple, though.
Okay, and 2 red and 1 purple.
And we're just giving you lips.
Lips forever.
With this double feature picture radio Vortho show.
Yes, that is exactly right. Also, there are fishnets involved at some point. But with that, I mean, I really love the Joyra's Temporal Water sponsor. That's definitely new.
I just want to splash it all over my face.
Oh my gosh. I just imagine. Can we? Okay. It would just be great. Think of all the refrigerators we could replace with Joyra's Temporal Water. I think it would just be so good for the environment, don't you think?
Yeah. Order a box for GPs. Get yourself hydrated. Or Grand Prix, rather. Get yourself hydrated. Although, you order a box of Joyra Temporal Water, and then you could probably get a box of Soylent.
Yeah. Well, you can't have too much at once, though, because it gives you an ice cream headache.
Yeah. And,
oh, that's true.
And also, I mean, but, you know, it's not as if temporal water has ever caused anything bad to happen to anyone,
never.
Right? Never. No, never.
Absolutely not.
Of course not. Oh, it's so good for you.
Sustainably farmed.
Sustainably sourced. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, no, it's really nice to have like such reliable sponsors like that, you know, such ethically uncompromised sponsors.
Time after time after time.
Uh-huh. Well, with that, why don't we go ahead and dive right into
episode 5, The Coalition Strikes Back.
Don't you hate it when a cat planeswalker stops you from working on your new project?
Ow!
No, Johnny, stop sunbathing on the game plan.
Ow!
No, Johnny, the Weatherlight steering wheel is not for back scratching.
Meow, meow, meow!
No, Johnny, stop sharpening your claws in the shiny weather seed hole.
Meow, meow, meow,
it's
meow.
New from Limo. Stop it. No, squirt bottle. Johnny also bears news. Venser is dead, and Karn is kicking it on Dominaria.
Meanwhile, at the gates of Benalia's capital, Lyra and her angels say that Liliana's death magic reeks like swamp cheese. It takes Gideon's persuasive words and profile to get them inside.
You told them about our plan to kill a demon?
Liliana says to him later.
How could you be so naive?
Gideon says.
Benalia's forces helped you and yours. The least we can do is trust them in return.
That's not the least we can do.
Uh-oh.
We could kill the angels. All of them.
Look, I know you're going through a hard time.
And take their crowns.
This isn't the place for this.
And boil their corpses.
We're riding down Main Street.
Scrape their skulls clean. Make a profane memento. Distill their gore into blood tallow candles.
Great. Now you made that child cry.
Daddy, the scary necromancer.
And use those candles to kill a newborn angel the moment after she takes her first breath. That's the least we can do.
Are you done?
Yes. And I feel so much better.
The planeswalkers ascend a tower. Peepers, the owl, alights on Gideon, and the Weatherlight swoops in, carrying one irate cat.
Johnny says,
Let me get this straight, meow. After I told you that facing Bolas on his plane would be the worst mistake imaginable, meow, you went straight there and got bounced against a wall like a meow goat bladder, meow.
That was just Gideon,
Liliana said.
I sashayed out of there.
Before leaving, Johnny rubs cat litter in the wound.
You shouldn't have gone to Amonkhet, meow.
The dregs of the Gatewatch are welcomed by Joyra and her crew, who are all too ready for a cabal-fighting, demon-hunting quest. Gideon is a gentleman and doesn't mention Liliana's brother, Trubs. Before the Weatherlight can fly to Mount Doom, the Stronghold, they need to go to Teloria West, and Joyra and Liliana bond over troublesome exes.
Upon their arrival, the mages Joda and Naban greet them. Joda, Joyra's ex, looks totally calm and composed, whereas Joyra is also suspiciously calm and composed. Between them, Raph the Shipmage bounces like a beeble and explains they need to find a Cabal agent for intel. As luck would have it, just such a Dementist killed 9 in a recent rampage. Liliana starts questioning the corpses one by one. It becomes clear that the bodies were a distraction from the Cabal agent's true motives. The crew of the Weatherlight and Joda position themselves to trap the hidden agent.
Surprise! I was here all along!
Says the baby-faced agent. After throwing some death spells and dementia magic around, the not-so-innocent student succumbs to the crew's combined efforts. Raph proves that he's not just a total goof by using an illegal spell, oops, to extract the needed knowledge from the agent. Gideon, Joyra, and Liliana pore over the new info.
What's this MacGuffin?
Gideon asks.
It sounds powerful.
Nothing really,
Liliana says.
Just the Black Blade, you know, the one from the Prelude, renowned for killing an elder dragon.
What was that again?
I'm sure you wouldn't be interested. It's a soul-sucking death blade, quenched in blood.
Well, then that is off the table. Too bad. If it's a legendary weapon, it probably has great flavor text written by someone super smart and handsome.
A pity indeed. We could have used it to slay Belzenlok, a dastardly demon.
We will have to find another way. One less legendary and cool sounding.
It just occurred to me, you lost your flashy pom-pom, whatever you called it.
My Cyril?
Yes, and you could use a weapon, one that could slay Bolas and redeem your every mistake.
You know, on second thought, I think we should discover the Black Blade's location. Just to keep it out of the hands of anyone else. I wouldn't want them to get hurt, you understand.
Oh, I do. I do.
Next week, Teferi!
Ah! Wow, that was quite the page-turner this particular week.
Yeah, and there were several pages, too, compared to the other stories, and
I'm a big fan of the longer stories, especially the adventure-filled ones.
Yeah, no, I mean, so what do we make so far of Liliana and Gideon's buddy cop banter?
It seems like Liliana has been in desperate need of a Snickers bar for the entire time she's been on Dominaria.
Yeah, the girl needs to, like, go with Jorah off to get a mani-pedi and have, like, a box of chocolates and, like, a bunch of Kleenex and a hug. Like, Liliana is never going to let anyone hug her, but she does need a hug.
She doesn't need a hug, but I think she does appreciate, like, willing, tough people that she doesn't have to reanimate and go through all that work. I mean, why through all that work when she can just, you know, have the same goals as someone? That's novel to her.
Yeah, no, I mean, the fact that Gideon is actually, like, defending her, he actually talks to a Johnny and says, well, Johnny's, like the rest of the Gatewatch before they all left or quit, were like, Liliana, this is all your fault. And Gideon says, no, actually, like, I would also take responsibility for this decision. It was a decision that we made together, and we're a team. And that's what I kind of really love about Gideon, because he sees himself as a leader of this group, but he also sees himself as someone who is responsible for other people, which is a very mono-white thing, and that's one of the reasons why Gideon must give the best hugs. So I just really enjoyed...
Yuck. But the... so sorry.
Gideon gives the best hugs. Let's be real here.
I'm afraid he's a backslapper.
It's just like he like brings you in and he's like... Thump,
slap, slap, slap,
thump,
slap.
Thump, thump. And you're just like, oh God, I feel like a baby being burnt.
I feel so loved right now, Gideon.
So much love.
Thanks for protecting me.
But I think what Liliana likes is she doesn't have to go through that emotional labor and that facade of actually liking someone else, and he's just all business, and she respects that, and even more so, she doesn't, you know, flaunt her dirty laundry out in front of everyone else, and so
she keeps it to herself, because
for someone with a pulse, you know, he's not that bad.
There's something there, but the thing is, I really, so here's the thing, I personally don't hope that they get together. I don't think they ever could. They kind of despise one another in a way, but I really appreciate the fact that they actually do appreciate things about one another. Gideon looks at Liliana and sees someone who is hamstrung by her contract, and knows that he looks at the greater good, he looks at the big picture, and knows that in order to bring down Bolas, he's going to need someone with the raw power and talent of Liliana's caliber. She is arguably probably one of the strongest planeswalkers, like, as part of the Gatewatch, just inherently.
And she put herself in a situation where she does need someone else, because she drained herself to do the chain veil, and Gideon's a man of his word, and he's going to protect her and help her kill her demon. So
exactly.
She respects that she's so easily able to manipulate him. So she doesn't really even have to. That's just the brilliant part. Like, imagine that.
Would you say that there's some sort of affinity that's building up between both of these diametrically opposed characters, or would you say that they are just growing more tolerant of each other?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, I do think that they are building a sense of mutual respect. Gideon has seen, I mean, if anyone in the Gatewatch is going to understand Liliana's point of view with regards to her brother and her family, it's going to be Liliana. Like, Liliana and Gideon have so much that they share in their backstory. They are both people who let other people in their lives down. It kind of, in one case, you know, a bunch of them died, and in the other case, that one guy is undead. And so was undead, now seriously dead, now actually undead. Super dead.
Yeah, extra dead. Well, he's basic dead. Is that a thing?
He's sort of back to neutral dead. But I really do like the fact that he empathizes with her, and he's not above, you know, ribbing her a little bit and, like, bantering with her, but he does, you know, understand that certain points of, you know, certain painful truths are there and should be private. And I think, as someone who has lived with a lot of shame and guilt as he has, he understands that burden in Liliana and lets her do her thing and lets her process it as she needs to.
So it's no drama Gideon.
No drama Gideon.
I think what she's going to give for him, he's helping her out, and what she's going to give to him is just help him through his painful memories and tell him, you know what, Gideon, it's not your fault. In fact, no one is your fault. In fact, take this black blade. Take it. Take it.
Stab Belzenlock in the heart.
Do it. Stab it. Stab it. Stab, stab, stab.
And eventually Bolas.
Yes, maybe. Maybe.
If you read the flavor text on the card. Do you think a Johnny was... Do you think he had maybe one too many sniffs of the catnip before rushing out to the deck and greeting Liliana and Gideon? He seemed like really aggro.
I mean, he is white green, but
and red.
And red. Naya seems to be aggro, but I think that Johnny was being way too, I don't know, way too judgmental of Lily. And maybe that's just the black player in me speaking, but I am really tired of everyone ganging up on Liliana. It's so just not, yeah.
You were surprised that the white green cat had an issue with a black planeswalker.
It's not that I'm surprised. I'm just disappointed. I'm disappointed in you and Johnny. I thought you did better. Could do better. Meow.
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 It's funny that you should mention that, AE, because Black's enemy colors, there are only two.
Yep. And they're white and green.
White and green.
Yep. But the thing is, like, you know, white and black, they can figure out a way to work together. And if there's one person who I think should understand how to work better with other planeswalkers and other people, it should be a Johnny, given his extensive network of people. Cat gets around, man.
Here's what I remember from Aether Revolt before the Gatewatch went to Amonkhet and Ajani went to Dominaria. The Gatewatch says, hey, Ajani, we're going to go to Amonkhet and face Bolas on his turf. We're 2 for 2. We're at this point 3 for 3. And we're going to make Bolas pay. And Ajani is like, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe we should, like, I don't know, plan first. And the Gatewatch says, we are super powerful. We can do it. We can take them on. We're
powerful
enough.
And the person behind that motivation was really Liliana, because she said we should do it. And Jace listened to her. And I think Jace was the only one who realized, hey, maybe we're not as hot as we were thinking of, because he knew that they hadn't actually defeated Emrakul.
That's true. But Ajani didn't make a big deal out of it. He said, I'm going to let them do what they're going to do. I'm just going to go to Dominaria and find help. But when he sees Gideon and Liliana again, he's making it out like he warned them. He got down on his paws and said, no, don't do this over my sexy cat dad body. There's no way in heck I'm going to let this happen. And then all of a sudden, well, okay, I just lost my train of thought. Anyway, I think Ajani is making his protest back on Kaladesh a little bit bigger than it actually was.
Or it's a little too late, one or the other. Ajani's being judgmental here. I just don't think that it's unnecessary, and the situation is what it is, and I think he should have just accepted it and moved on.
It makes Gideon look a lot better. Like, he looks like Gideon's the bigger Leonin in this case.
Yeah, he does have the bigger pecs, maybe.
But no, Gideon's no nonsense. He's like, okay, we made a mistake. We're going to go forward. We're not going to worry about this. We need to kill out some demons.
And Liliana is manipulative, but I'm just saying that there are 4 other adults in that group, and one of them could have said something.
Yeah, not in front of the kids,
4
too,
adults, like, and Chandra, maybe, but...
4 adults and... Okay, there are at least 3 other adults in that whole situation who could have said no, and they didn't. So I'm just saying people need to be held accountable for their actions, and Liliana is certainly going to be a part of that blame, but she is certainly not the only
one
to blame.
And she certainly doesn't regret eating that demon with her 20 crocodile faces. Mm-hmm.
I think 24, right?
Okay, yes.
2 dozen, yeah. Okay. Nom noms. Well, so they join the Weatherlight, and it's kind of adorable because everyone's like, yay, we're going to all go find a Cabal person together. And when they land in Talaria West, I feel like the entire episode kind of becomes a Scooby-Doo sort of whodunit sort of thing.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for, like, Shauna to be like, jeepers, we're going to go find us a Cabal person. And then, you know, then the Raph is like, zoinks, he's right over there.
This way to the moor. Let's do your necromancy thing. We're all just going to turn our heads in disgust. And then the first student, like, sits straight up and says, I was in the tower, and then there was a lot of water, and then there were these serpents. And Liliana is like, what serpents? And the little girl is like, there were serpents everywhere, and then I drowned.
Yeah.
And then Liliana's like, you're done. And she's like, okay, good night. And then one by one, each of these nine corpses tells a startlingly similar story, and they figure out it was dementia magic. That means the cabal was here.
Yeah. And then they all do. I like the idea that they all go down to the morgue and they're all doing the little, they're the Scooby-Doo gang, the stealthy walk, you know, the thing where they're just like, do, 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 do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you hear the cabal, when the cabal guy like becomes, makes himself apparent, I can hear like Raph doing the Scooby, like the Shaggy and Scooby-Doo thing where they're like legs are pinwheeling or whatever.
And the onomatopoeias come up on the screen.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Zoinkies!
And then the kid, and then Tom is just like, and I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those pesky Weatherlight kids.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't watch Scooby-Doo when I was younger.
Oh,
I'm
no
too
worries.
Good for that.
Sorry.
I watched DuckTales.
Yeah. Oh, DuckTales is great too. Danger lurks behind you.
There's a stranger out to find you.
Oh, and he's going to take your artifact to the
there's
cabal.
There's one line which
cabal
I wanted
tales.
To quote.
Woo!
So,
search in Tolaria West for the Dark Tales. Woo!
As Johnny teleported away, planeswalked away, we don't get often get a description of planeswalking. So Martha Wells writes this, quote, golden shadows formed around him as he turned away as if he stalked through a field of high grass. Then a heartbeat later, he vanished as he walked from the plane. So I like that. End quote. As I said, we don't often get that. And it's possible because maybe there's an MO in the company that you just don't spell that out too particularly. But Martha Wells took a swing at it and she got it.
It reminded me of that scene in Gladiator when Russell Crowe is like walking through the wheat grass of the wheat. And he's like, let me touch my wheat.
But now he's got a tail flicking behind him.
Yes, exactly.
Irritation.
It's a very slightly inconvenienced cat.
Yep. Like, God, I got to find more friends.
Do you two believe a Johnny when he says it's ruined, it's all over, there's nothing can repair this harm that you've done on Amonkhet?
I think that's... Okay, so I think that's unfair because Amonkhet was going to get wrecked one way or another, right? Like, they just happened to be there when the fallout happened. Bolas was going to show up. The scorpion god was going to come out. The locust god was going to bring down the Hecma. I mean, apocalypse is going to rain down regardless of what happens. Scarab god was going to come back and destroy Standard.
Mm-hmm.
It was just going to completely, you know, like, it was bound to happen. They just happened to be there, and the impact that they had on the actual, like, what happened afterwards was minimal, if nothing.
Yeah, they might have done something. They could have maybe, Hazoret and the band of survivors may not have survived without them, so.
I eternalized Aronus.
That's
in one of
so
my
flavorful.
GP matches.
That's
oh, it was
so
great.
Flavorful.
Oh, it was so good.
But I don't think that it's their fault that they did it. If anything, they helped improve matters for the survivors of Noctamoon. So, I don't know. Like I said, a Johnny...
A little catty.
Yeah. Just a little catty.
And somebody woke up on the wrong side of the letterbox.
Yeah, that's him. But anyway, we are also all black players here. So, we feel like maybe some Selesnya kiddies should maybe think... Look at their own paws before they before they judge other people's...
Yeah, what's the expression? Whoever is sinned first cast the first mouse toy.
The monorock.
Yeah, the monorock. Yeah. Or mouse toy. Possibly both. A Johnny's hands are really big.
So this last weekend, not only was the full set of Dominaria released today, but also GP Seattle was last weekend. Does anyone want to say a few words about that or the experience they had there?
Well, I found my experience to be at GP Seattle amazing. I met so many friends and listeners of the show. Thank you so much for listening to us. And it was just amazing to catch people get Commander games in. The cosplay community really knocked it out of the park for this one.
Well, it's on point, and I do want to thank MJ Scott for that.
Yes. And AE, you definitely like came in swinging with your amazing cosplays. Like, God, your Urtai, like... goatee was amazing.
I didn't even recognize you.
I didn't recognize you either.
I was like, who is this handsome man with a goatee? Oh. That's my co-host. I should probably keep that thought to myself.
Oops. Who is this overly familiar cosplayer?
Although that moment when you walked up to us with your really terrible bodysuit as Jace the Body Sculptor. My gosh. We were dying. Oh, I'm so
I guess
glad.
I don't want to go into the bit here, but you can see our pictures.
Yeah, we're on Twitter, so you can totally see our pictures from the GP. Justin, I know.
Well, Jace the Body Sculptor, it looked like he had some work done.
Yeah, he definitely did. Some injections here and there.
Max Gaines in the sanctum. He dragged it out of me.
So Justin, how did you like the GP?
I love the GP. I got to play Legacy for the first time and had a lot of fun. Legacy has this reputation about it being a big, scary format where things are super complex. It's actually not. There are some complex interactions, but the format is really deep. I played against a different deck every single round, and I learned something new about the game every single round. So if Legacy doesn't intimidate you because it costs so much, but it intimidates you because it's got this reputation, and don't believe it for a minute.
The people are generally nice and welcoming in these really late stage tonal formats, at least to me.
Yeah.
White males, they're pretty welcoming.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't really played anything other than standard in terms of constructed or a little bit of modern, but I didn't really compete in the main. Unfortunately, the current standard's not to my taste. Scarab God. Also, I don't have a Legacy deck, so.
You know, I played the Scarab God for the standard main event in my Grixis deck, and I was just so not evenly matched up. Like, the meta, it just totally shifted. Have you seen the top 16 for GP Seattle?
Yep.
Like, blue-red God Pharaoh's Gift?
Yep.
Why play a Scarab God where you can just eternalize a combat celebrant and have all of the combats?
Yep. All of the combats. Just all of them.
I digress. It's my tournament report. I did fine. I was happy with my results. A friend of mine made day two for the first time in Legacy. Cody, we're super proud of you. Congratulations. And my playtesting buddy, Matt DiMaggio, made fourth in the Seattle GP. So I'm super proud of him.
Yeah. Well done, Matt.
Congratulations, Matt. I just remember I have to steal a little bit of his glory. The week before GP Seattle, he was like, "Well, Justin, I don't know if I should choose the red-black aggro deck that beat me in the PPTQ last weekend or Snek." And I said, "You should do red-black." And he's like, "I will do red-black. And I will win it for both of us, mostly for you."
Mostly for me.
Mostly for AE.
I never met Matt before the date GP, so I can't make that kind of claim, but I'll just be over here. Applauding the both of you.
He is super
sweet.
He's
a really nice guy, actually. He's lovely.
Yep. And he deserved that win. He's been working really, really, really hard for it. So congratulations, Matt.
I'm not great at remembering names, but I met a lot of great people there, and I can point them better on Twitter.
Yes.
I admit.
Yes. We saw a lot of amazing Twitter friends, which was great.
There was a good Tiana cosplayer who had scraped her cosplay together quickly, and she said she was a mechanic in real life, and she enjoyed seeing an angelic mechanic. So
that's awesome.
That's what representation's all about.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. I'm really excited to see that. Well, with that, I think that we only have one more thing.
Boyle Goyves.
We have a giveaway and a winner that we need to announce. So
signed Boyle Goyves.
Signed Foil Goyves.
the rare from one of the most popular but rarely opened sets in all of Magic's history.
8th edition.
Value worth approximately...
$2.
$80 divided by 40. $200 each divided by 100. And you get these amazing...
So...
They have stars and asterisks where their power and toughness should be.
So, but I mean, signed by us, it makes it basically infinite. True, it's not like the good picture of Lurgoyf, but it's the second best. It's
now
second
damaged playset of Lurgoyfs because they've been marked with black ink forever.
By us. Also, I've been told to add googly eyes, so you may get googly eyes. But yes, for our first anniversary, for our first birthday, we did a giveaway for 4 foil Lurgoyfs and a custom cat token drawn by me. And we decided to see if any of you wanted to retweet us so we can give the thing to you. And the winner, according to this random name picker I found on the internet, is David Schultz. Woo! David, thank you so much for being such a wonderful listener and for retweeting your favorite memory of us. It's a really great thing to know that our work on Thursday nights and Malik's amazing work as well goes out there and entertains so many of you. So,
well, what was the favorite memory?
Oh,
so
God,
may so
memory.
I may bask in nostalgia and remember the old times when we were baby Lurgoyfs.
Our baby, okay.
And the world was our oyster. And we were averaging 6 listens an episode.
that's sad and so true.
And we had like friends on SoundCloud that were probably Russian bots.
Yep. Well, David says, I love Lurgoyfs, and my favorite moment was the opening of episode 16. The singing and discussion about Liliana were great, but the Chain Veil commercial was amazing.
Oh, I remember that episode.
The Chain Veil!
Deep in the forest of Chandelier.
Imbued with the souls of 1,000 Onaki warriors.
And a hint of vanilla.
Roar, the Chain Veil! Chain Veil, what should I do about my job? Go get a new one!
That's right! And stop living in your mother's basement.
Rawr!
She hates you.
Rawr! Well, anyway.
But I don't, because I'm the Chain Veil.
I have no heart.
Also, props to Russell, the rogue artificer. Rogue artificer, who also is a fan of the GP, and we're happy to see his positivity.
Yeah, thank you so much. He really liked our preview song, so thank you. But yeah, I believe that is everything. That's our last order of business. So with that, we will see you next week when we cover episode 6, Revenge of the...
No. Oh. It's the Return of the Black Blade.
The Return of the Black Blade. Thank you so much.
I think it's the Return of the Black Blade.
Who knows?
Oh, wait, Teferi's coming in next week.
Return of the Time Mage.
And maybe Karn.
It's a trap.
And before we log out, I found out it's that gal Carolyn on Twitter who cosplayed Tiana. So
wonderful.
Bye. Wonderful. Follow her. She's amazing.
And follow me too. I'm at Justiferous.
I'm at Ninox Morpork.
And I'm at AE Marling. I can remember things if I look them up on Twitter. So that's where to see all the great people that we met at GP Seattle.
And
there are a lot.
Yes, and you can also join follow us at Lurgoyfs on Twitter.
You guys just don't want to let go, do you?
No, we don't.
You don't want to let go of this amazing episode.
It's been so good.
Really well. Let's check. Okay, this is definitely the end now.
The end.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye again.
Bye.
Bye for reals.
Meow.
We love you. So does the Johnny, even
Speak
though he gets
yourself.
Mad. Oh, Mirari. You know, it's going to be at least a few weeks until my temporal water arrives, and I've been thinking about what else I've been waiting for.
Planeswalker Karn, what have I done to deserve such a fate?
Everlasting love and companionship. That's what I really want.
I'm an inanimate artifact, and you're no angel.
You're the most powerful artifact in the world, and, well, me, I'm the fairest.
Second fairest.
God damn it, Mirari! You need to be taught a lesson!
No, I'm not a yoga ball. No.
Get ready for downward dog!
No, 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 no.
Get ready for it, Mirari.
No.
Get ready for it. Here it comes.
No.
It's coming. No. I need some support in my thighs.
No.
It's happening.
No.
I can feel more powerful in this position. It's working.
No. Do not consent. No.
It's totally happening right now, Mirari. I can hold this position forever.
Guys, I'm dying. I'm dying. Guys. Yeah, that makes a good outro.
You don't have to cut out all that laughter.